Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
Welcome back to the show. My next guest is Jan Makula. He is the owner of Strength-Based Leadership based in Sykesville, Maryland. Hello, Jan. How are you?
Good. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your day to join us.
My pleasure.
All right, so Jan, just start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
What I do is I have Strength-Based Leadership. It's the organization that I have, and I help organizations and individuals improve organizational performance and outcomes, and work on different things from discovering where organizations may have some gaps in performance and help them get better, but also work from strengths, and employees and organizations work. People are allowed to work from their strengths and do what they do best every day, outperform those who don't. And so it helps organizations be more profitable, less turnover, all the good stuff you can think of happens when you have engaged employees.
All right, so be specific. Tell us, what are the most common reasons people come to you for help?
Most common reasons is that they have there's something that they say, we think we can do better. We're kind of stuck in, you know, we've always done it this way kind of a mentality. And once I help them think through that and help them get out of, you know, that rut, and where they've got, typically it's large organizations, it's unwanted turnover. And when unwanted turnover costs organizations a lot of money. If you lose somebody you didn't want to lose, the rule of thumb is 1.5 times the person's salary to replace them. So I show some organizations that they're bleeding money with turnover, and I help them reduce that turnover. And get employees and retain employees that they want.
All right. So what are some of the keys to attracting the correct or proper employees?
In today's world, the millennials are 40% of the workforce. And many people have just always managed or just find somebody they think fits their organization and offer them a job. But the millennials are changing all of that. And they're more connected and highly educated, for example, than previous generations. They're more ethically and racially diverse as a generation. And they're less likely, for example, to be registered voters, and they're less likely to affiliate with organized religion. They're more, I would say, independent, if you will. They want to have a voice in organizations. They want to do quality work. They want to work in an organization that has a sense of mission and value. They want to work somewhere that's bigger than themselves. In fact, all people do. But when I work with organizations, I ask the owners or whoever's in charge, why does your organization exist? And they'll always say money, and I say, nope, that's a result. Tell us why you exist, and there's what that vision, that purpose, that belief, and why do you do it? And that's what especially millennials, but all employees want to work for. And they, once you announce that or believe that and work from it, people want to be there and work with you. And so they want to also work in an organization there where career development is part of why they're attracted to you. And somewhere around the area of 60% of younger workers come to the workplace want to know that there's development in their role in your organization, for example. It's one of the many things that organizations have not offered is internal training, if you will, or development for all employees, but in particular the younger generations. And so they're having to put those things in place to help employees grow and develop in their roles.
Yeah, it's interesting. I personally think that millennials just know and understand what their value is. So when they go and spend their time doing something, it's, you know, they're not willing to just be a small part of a gigantic whole. You know, we're not trying to just go to work and punch a clock, do our part, and then go home. We want to be in the mix. We want to understand. You know, we want to understand why. You know, and we want to be a part of it.
Exactly right. And I try to get that point across to business owners. You know, and you know, to older generations, baby boomers and older, you say be here at 8 o'clock. They're at 8 o'clock. To a younger generation, they say why, and they want to know that their work is important. And I read a study with millennials, and one of the key things I remember is one of the millennials said, "I'm not here to work so you can drive a Mercedes." In other words, they're not built. They don't want to have their your career built on their back. They want to be part of the organization, grow and develop, and contribute.
Right.
And
I
so,
think, you know,
yeah.
I say, Jen, I think another issue is that a millennial doesn't want to waste time. They don't. They're not there. It's not about hours. It's not about. See, I think one of the differences between the generations. The people who own the businesses now and the people who the millennials who are trying to break in and get jobs, the biggest difference is the older generation, they're it's about putting your time in, and it's about building from the bottom up, whereas a millennial is ready to be compensated for the value that they bring right now. It's not about putting equity in. It's about what I can do for you now. Do you understand what I mean?
And I do, and that's one of the things when I talk to younger workers and they come to the organization and, you know, they say, I've been here 3 months and I haven't been promoted yet. And I tell them, well, you know, you have to learn, I don't want to say pay your dues, but you have to show that you have the skill sets to move on to whatever the next big thing is. And so learning those things and asking everybody in an organization, for example, should have a mentor, and that mentor helps guide you through whatever organizations that you're with and helps you understand how to achieve whatever your goals or objectives are. And I had a young man who said, I've now moved twice because they wouldn't promote me to being a manager, and you know, and I've been there like 9 or 10 months. And I said, so you've done two moves, right? And I said, so you've started over twice. And I said, and so if you would have stayed with the first organization, which the individual really liked, he would now be a manager by now. But he gave it all up because, in his mind, he wasn't getting promoted quick enough. And so, there's a realization on both parts and why I mentioned a mentor, to help individuals understand that you're not going to be promoted just because you want to, and that, you have to have the skill sets and so forth to move into whatever those roles are. And so that's one of the things I work on, especially with younger workers in the workforce.
All right. So you actually came across a study on employee retention. Tell us a little bit about it.
One of the banes of organization is unwanted turnover. And many organizations, especially smart ones, have figured out that it's cheaper for me to retain you and keep you and develop you than find a new you, because it costs me more money to find a new you than to keep you. And it also demonstrates that when I build an organization or have an organization where you want to come and work and stay there, you have productivity goes up, profitability goes up, and turnover obviously goes down. So it's in the employer's best interest to do those things in today's world. That's one of the things I do, is I help organizations define that and what good looks like from them. And so it's one of those things that, as I said, is changing. On average, 3 out of 10 employees agree that there's some one at work that encourages their development in today's world. When that figure doubles to 6 in 10, profitability increases by about 11%, and retention by employees goes up by 28%. So you can, if you just look at the hard numbers, it's in employers and employees' best interest to be able to do to have that kind of a culture where your development is encouraged and supported. And one of the things that's foundational to all of this is that the organization, demonstrate that you care about the employee, truly care. And when you can demonstrate to employees that you care about them as individuals, they will rock for you. And as I tell managers all the time, is if your employees believe that you could care less about them, they're going to let you walk off a cliff. But if they believe that you truly care about them as an individual, they'll walk through fire for you. And it's one of the things I do with manager training, especially frontline managers, is to help them understand and rethink about their role as a manager, because it is one of those things that are changing in the world today. And how people learn is changing. For example, on-demand learning, agile organizations, people can learn at lunchtime or learn on their own time on particular things. Micro-learning is one of the things that's very popular now. I do some segments on that I publish for organizations on from microlearning for them, and some of them are anywhere from 90 seconds to 5 minutes long, just microlearnings, and they come back next week for another session. So it's not long, drawn out, learning things. It's informal as well. It's more learner-centric. Specific problems, for example, an organization may have, they bring a team together, and the team works through learning on how to better tackle given issues, be it with technology or what they may not understand or where some issues may be in a process or whatever it happens to be. So it's and feedback as well is crucial to especially the manager's role in giving appropriate feedback to employees. Feedback is the breakfast of champions. The more managers do it with their employees, the more engaged employees are. That data is crystal clear. And almost half of employees report say that they only receive feedback from their managers a few times a year. And the best managers in the world give feedback to employees every week. And, it's not always, and some of it is developmental. It's not me just saying you're a great guy and you're doing wonderful work, which is appreciated. But if there's things that aren't going well, helping you fix them. And that's one of the things I used to say when I was a manager with organizations: what keeps you from doing quality work, and what can I do to make your job easier? And when employees say I need a new widget maker, my role was to help them get a new widget maker. And employees respond to those kinds of things. When I take an interest in you as the individual, they respond to that.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head before when you said culture. You really want to develop the proper culture where people want to work and want to stay.
Correct. And that's one of the things that I look at when I sit with organizations. I have a tool that we use that's anonymous to all employees, and the owners of the business, when I sitting next to somebody on an airplane, they say, "What do you do?" And I say, "I help you increase profitability and performance of your organization." And they'll say, "Oh, we're doing fine." And I say, "How do you know? Unless you have some measure for it, you don't know." And they'll say, "Well, we've got our financial reports that we see on a quarterly or semi-annual or annual basis." And I say, "Those are all lagging indicators of performance. The leading indicators of your performance are the culture that you have, which you hit on, leadership, operations, training, and, for example, customer service." And there's a tool that let them get through, and they'll always be surprised that they aren't quite as good as they think they are. And it's not intentional, but, they didn't intend for it to be that way. But we help them fix some of those issues, and surprise, profitability will go up, customer retention goes up, employee retention goes up. So those kinds of things improve when employers pay attention to it and give it some, the culture is the big thing. And you don't change culture overnight. It has to be, purposeful. And when I get a request to come in and, to help organizations, I say to them, if the big kahuna isn't in the room, I'm not going to do it, and please save the money, because nothing's going to change. And, the leadership of the group has to be in the room as well, because everybody has to get on the same page. And so it's one of the things, and when I come in, that I pretty much demand is the big kahuna has to be in the room. And I sit with them sometimes separately and just talk about what it is that they want and how they want to do it. And quite often they just never thought about it. And when they think about it and they define it out in their mind's eye, they can usually do it.
So, Jan, what are some of the signs that you might be in or you might be managing a toxic culture or a broken culture?
You can actually see it just walking down the hallway. When I walk down hallways, you can see how people walk and how they engage. When people walk into the meeting room or organization, do they just walk in and sit down and kind of look at their cell phones or whatever, or do they actually engage with their peers around them and say, "Hey, how you doing?" And just chit-chat kind of things. And obviously, they demonstrate that they want to be here. When I talk in sessions, and the boss will be up talking about whatever, and I'm watching the audience, and you can just see the eyes roll if the individual's talking about something that that the people in the audience know that he or she doesn't really believe. You've all sat in those meetings where you said, you know, he or she doesn't even believe what they're talking about. So much of it is nonverbal, clues that will tell you that. And when you sit with employees separately, and I talk to them without management in the room, and I get them to open up about why their roles and all those kinds of things, they'll tell you, you know, that, you know, hey, you know, we don't get the support of management, or the management just treats us as a commodity. Those kind of statements start coming out. And I helped an organization last year reduce their turnover from 84% to 10%. And they have 22 frontline managers. This is a manufacturing facility. And after 4 months, that was the result. And it was just training the managers on how they were interacting with the employees and what the managers wanted to do in a positive way. And people responded to that. And so it was this group of managers had never received a management training program in their whole time in the organization.
Yeah, that's super important to make sure that the intermediaries between the boss and the workers, you know, the high and the low, the intermediary has to be well trained, has to be able to, you know, negotiate certain situations, and has to make sure that they are well suited to and educated enough to handle both sides.
Exactly. When I get invited to do keynote addresses or work in seminars for different organizations, I say, so all of you frontline managers in the room, you got promoted because you're good at something, or you're the most senior person in the department. And they all say, yep, that's how we got promoted. And then I say, but then they sent you to management school for about a week to learn all the skill sets for being a good manager. Zippo. Nada. And sometimes you've got the heads of the organization sitting here, and you can just see the light go on for them. Oh, God, you know, there's our problem, one of our problems. And as I tell organizations, your organization cannot move any faster than your worst manager, frontline manager. And so training your frontline managers is critical for your organizational success. And so that's one of the things, as you clearly mentioned, is that you have to have the managers trained in how to help teams, instead of just saying, you know, here's what I want you to do, have it done by 5 o'clock, and saying, here's what we need to do, and then is there something that I can help you if you don't understand how to do it or and need something, you know, come talk to me, or I'll come talk to you about it. It's a changing role. It's a mindset change and an education change for managers. And when they understand it, they actually enjoy it, because a lot of the problems that they have with managing people go away when people know that you care about them as a person. They want to work with you. They want to be performing and do quality work. And so some of the issues that you have as manager or as managers have go away, and they like it because now they're not, you know, working in this toxic culture that they knew was there perhaps, but they didn't know how to change or how to deal with it. And so, you know, it's a lot of benefit for a lot of people. And so it's one of those things that has changed.
That's interesting that you said that struck me was, you know, when you were talking about the relationship between the manager and the employee, and you know, the manager tells the employee, you know, here's what you have to do and has to be done by, you know, the certain time. And that sort of struck me, because that doesn't necessarily work. And, you know, getting back to the whole, you know, millennial discussion, it doesn't necessarily work for a millennial. I'd rather, you know, someone like me would rather be told, you know, here's the game plan, here's what we're trying to accomplish, here's what you have to do, and here's why. Why this job is something that's important to the entire structure of what we're trying to do, as opposed to somebody just coming to you blindly and saying, here, this is what you have to do, and this is when it has to be done by, you know?
Exactly correct. One of the things that I train managers on is I say, your organization, every job has value, right? And they all say, oh, yeah, the job has value. And I say, well, tell your employees that. Tell the person who does that function, we value you because whatever you do provides value to the organization. And I say to the manager, now watch the employee's eyes when you tell them that, because the eyes will change. Wow. Jan values what I do. He's never told me that before. And what that means to the organization, you making that little widget, it now allows us to send that product or service out the door. Without you making that little widget, this whole thing wouldn't happen. And so when people see that their widget making has a bigger purpose to the organization, they buy into that. And so that's part of the communication that managers have to bring to the job or to the workplace. I would say to you, you nailed it on the head. You know, I said, here's what I want you to do. Here's what it needs to be done by. How you do it is up to you. And so I would give you the freedom to do it your way, not necessarily my way. And, you know, how do you work best? And I would have sat with you and we would figure out what your strengths are and how you work best. And that is one of the things I have managers do is to spend time. I coach them through it. Everybody's strengths comes up on a grid because we use Gallup's strength survey to do that. And your top strengths come up and first thing that all the managers see is none of their employees are the same. And I tell them, one size fits nobody. If you're managing all your employees the same, mediocrity is going to be in your future. And, for example, let's just, I have an example from the CEO of Ancestry.com, who was Paul Allen. And they attracted a guy from the National Security Administration who was an outstanding rock star there as an intern. But he could get things done faster than everybody else could. And the NSA manager said, slow down, dude. You're embarrassing all of us. And so when he was recruited by Ancestry, they looked at his top five and said, this guy wants to be challenged with, one of his strengths is he wanted to be challenged with other, you know, all the time. And so they allowed him to get those things done. And then they added projects that were available to the guy to do. And he loved working at Ancestry. And it was all because the managers at NSA didn't work from the guy's strengths. They all wanted him to be molded into what they had done for years at NSA. And so it's one of those,
example. And, you know, that's interesting because I was just thinking about the whole, you know, my way as opposed to the establishment's way. And, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, because look, what the NSA has done over the course of time has worked. They're the best at what they do. So for them to want to mold somebody into what they do is not necessarily a bad thing. I think that particular circumstance was exactly that, circumstantial, where that particular person just wasn't a fit for what they do, even though he was a superstar. You know, sometimes that just happens as well.
Correct. Yep, and it's just a cultural fit that he may not, you know, fit into a role, but part of that was that, and you're right, NSA is very good at what they do. They're world class, but they could have gotten a better outcome from the individual if they would have allowed him to work from his way of working. And so
isn't that okay, yeah. Sometimes that you just, yeah, you're just not a fit?
Exactly, and that's one of the things that I work with when I work with individuals.
Because, Jen, and I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but how could you, in that particular circumstance, how could you expect the NSA, who's done quality work for years, their way, how could you expect mm-hmm. them to just change what they do for one person? It doesn't make sense.
It's not changing what they do. It's still the same outcomes. But what you're saying is this individual can do things quicker than on average than, you know, what most of us, you know, have become accustomed to. Instead of saying, slow down, dude, we could have said, if you like working at this pace and you're good at it, we can assign other things for you to help you grow and develop.
See, it's so funny because I always like to parallel things to sports. And this, yep, this reminds me of what's going on in the NFL now with these really, really great wide receivers. There's two mm-hmm. wide receivers that just changed teams, Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham Jr. from the Steelers and the Giants, respectively. And the debate is how much of their attitude and how much of their off the field stuff, how much of the, right, are you willing to take to deal with their production? And it kind of parallels here. Are you kind of willing to bend and change what you do a little bit in order to get that supreme talent like this guy was, doing things so quick?
Yep. And you bring up a good analogy with football. The two that you cited are exceptionally talented athletes. And every one of those in individuals has a coach who helps them do more of what they do best. Nobody's asking either one of those things to, you know, to do something that they, that's not in their strength. They're not asking Odell Beckham to become a defensive back. And so they've got what he has done. But if the organization looks at the, either one of those individuals, and if Odell Beckham, just because I was reading your article on it this morning, if what he does in the clubhouse or in the locker room, if he is tearing down the locker room or the organization having a negative impact on the team, then the team's got to make a decision on the value of Odell Beckham. And the Redskins, Washington Redskins, got rid of Swearinger because he was having a negative impact on the locker room. And you could say, but he's an all-star safety. And they said, we don't care. Yeah, and because the negative impact in their mind was greater than what he was doing for them on the field. So that's part of the trade-off, and organizations have to make that decision. Is, you know, is the value, nobody's taking away from the value of those individuals, but if that value starts affecting the performance of others, there's where the question comes.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because I was just thinking about it some more, and the one organization in football that is steadfast in their culture, in what they do, is the one that keeps winning the championship every what it seems like every single year, and that's the Patriots.
Right.
The Patriots. Right. The Patriots have that NSA attitude where it's like, you do what we do, otherwise you, it doesn't matter how special you are. You do what we do, or you don't do here. You know what I mean?
Right. But the coach sits down with them at the, whoever they're recruiting or signing as a free agent or coming in as an NFL, you know, new rookie in the NFL. And he sits down with them all on day one. He says, if you come here, here's what I or we expect. And if you don't live up to our expectations, you may find yourself, you know, employed elsewhere. And they have a model that's, you know, that's absolutely correct. It's worked for them for, you know, at least six Super Bowls. And so, and it's not going to change anytime time soon. But everybody knows what the expectations are. And that's one of the things that many organizations don't tell individuals, here's what we expect of you.
And it's hilarious because we were also talking about, you know, the middle management, right? The intermediaries, mm-hmm. the people who need to be trained. And who's the Patriots' number one manager? Tom Brady, right? Tom Brady's is that guy, the intermediary between all the players and the coaching and the management. He's the guy, and he's been very well trained. The Patriots have a great organization. It's funny that like we're talking about it. Football's a great parallel.
Yeah, it is. You can be baseball, can be, you know, basketball. You know, it doesn't matter the sport. They're all, you know, the same things, but they're all, whatever sport you're into. All those individuals you're watching are all extremely talented. And why do they go above and beyond and those kinds of things? Some of it's self-motivation, but some of it is because the organization they're in and they want to be part of that organization. And, you know, it's some of it is that you see with people when they free agents. There are certain teams that people who are free agents don't want to go to. And I say, why is that? And so right, they know,
they,
you know,
run properly, they have poor management.
Right. Or they treat people poorly, those kinds of things.
All right, Jan. Well, listen, unfortunately, we're out of time now. It was a great conversation. I really enjoyed speaking with you today. It's valuable, valuable stuff. How can people reach out to you if they would like to find out more information about strength-based leadership and the book that you've written?
First of all, if they reach out to me, they can email me directly at jlmakela@gmail.com. They can go to my website, strength-based leadership, all one word, strengthbasedleadership.net, all one word, and they can contact me through that. Or they can contact me direct, phone me, 443-364-8341, and I can talk to them on the phone, no charge call. I'll spend some time on the phone for them, and if I can help them, I will tell them that. If I can't help you, I'll tell you that. And so if there's and if they contact me, if they want the chapter of the book I wrote on Be the Manager People Won't Leave, I will send them that chapter on that particular topic, e-version, the Amazon e-book, for free. And so they can also get a copy of what we've been talking about for free as well.
All right, perfect. Well, listen, Jan, thanks again for coming on the show today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good day.
All right, you too. Take care.
Bye.
And thank you all for listening. We'll be back right after this break.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
Hi, this is Terry Crews, actor, former football player, game show host, father of five, and all-around big dude. I'm also an expert on drama. I know all kinds of drama. There's the good kind that comes with having a house full of kids. There's the bad kind, like season-ending injuries. There's the necessary kind, like having an agent in Hollywood. And there's silly drama, like the drama around my percolating pectorals. And then there's the drama you can skip.
Skip the drama that comes with not having your high school diploma or equivalency. Find free adult education classes near you and finish your high school diploma. Visit finishyourdiploma.org.
Or text DIPLOMA to 97779. Message and data rates may apply. Reply STOP to opt out. That's DIPLOMA to 97779. And leave the drama to actors like me.
Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ed Council.